Podcast Show.
You want me to turn it up?
Send your text to 49451 on Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, here we go. It is a Tuesday edition of the program, but it kind of feels like a Monday because we had Monday Night Football yesterday, and we have an NFL game to recap, and boy, that won't be a lot of fun. But we will do it anyway, because why? We're here for you. Commiserate.
We're givers.
To complain.
We give.
Yeah, we give. I'll tell you what.
Give and we give.
Giving. I saw a lot of giving last night. Let's give you guys another set of downs. Let's give you guys another chance.
Especially, I mean, the Saints tried to give over and over.
Not as much as the...
Did you watch the Marshawn... Were you watching Marshawn Lattimore and DK Metcalf closely?
Oh, yeah.
They could have called both of them so many times.
Should have called both of them.
Jeez.
And you know what? Be nice if 14 for Seattle would have been more involved in the offense and less involved with Lattimore.
I mean, it's... And I'll tell you what...
Right?
I was very interested to watch it. We're really getting into it already.
Well, let's get a headline. Where are you at?
I'm in the Redbox producer's booth. Redbox, smarter way to watch and play. They have newest movies, fresh in theater. Under $2 a night, hit the box or stream on demand. Headlines?
Yep.
Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Headlines this hour brought to you by Venue Kings, venuekings.com. CX lose 13-10. They're 2-5. Jacksonville's next. Marquise Blair has a broken kneecap. Kraken and Sounders both in action tonight. Kraken hosts Montreal, 6:30 pregame here on KJR and the Kraken Audio Network. You're listening. This is Inside Kevin and I. Sounders at LAFC tonight, 7:30 first kick on Sports Radio 1090 KJR. Midweek game. Wow. Crazy. They just played a couple
Tuesday.
Days ago.
Yeah.
World Series game one tonight. Atlanta at Houston. 5:09 first pitch on Fox 13 here in Seattle. And Mike Tomlin says he's not interested in the USC job.
And he's mad. I don't understand the anger.
That was my boy. My boy Tim Benz asked him the question. He got all bent out of shape. You know what? Shut up.
This isn't some internet rumor, Mike.
He's mad in general. Let's start the show. I got to tell you this though. We were in our guy Shramik's in the other room. He's shooting the Husky Hawks later today.
Boy, he looks good today.
Shram, did you hear Tomlin in the hallway? Yeah. So after the Seahawks Pittsburgh game, we set up in the hallway. Outside the Seahawk locker room.
Okay.
And down the hall from that, probably 25 yards and around the corner, is the Steelers locker room. It's also where the officials locker room is kind of next to it. And Tomlin, after the game, which last I checked, they won. Correct?
Yeah. If memory serves, yeah, they won in extra time.
He was losing it on the officials.
Really?
I mean, losing it. Like, anger and it, I mean, just losing it. MFing these guys like you would. I didn't see anything about him getting fined last week either. And boy, I'll tell you, like he's just angry in general. Just like the last time we were in Pittsburgh, the same thing, and it was with the officials outside their room.
Huh.
I'm not sure why the NFL officials are like cool with their room being next to his, because he just.
So was he. Okay, so their rooms are next to each other. Was he going over to the officials' room?
Just outside their room as they're walking in and just MFing.
Oh, interesting.
Like, you could Shrammel back me up. You could hear him down the hallway from a long ways away just going nuts on him. So when he got mad at Tim Benz today because he asked him the question about Carson Palmer, like, whatever, man. You're an angry individual, so that's fine.
I just don't understand that.
Coaches are like that. They're
but it's not – this is – look, man – like it or not, when one of the most significant alums from the football
Heisman
program
winner, right? Yeah.
Says like very clearly that you're one of the people that they're interested in, you're going to be out. Now, if he wanted to be mad at Carson Palmer,
be mad at
fine.
Carson Palmer.
But being mad about, they got to ask these questions. Blah, blah, blah.
Shut up, Tomlin.
Man.
All right.
Whatever.
So I made a list.
A book of lists?
I made a list. Not a book of lists.
Oh, okay.
Gassed one of those one day.
Yeah,
I did a list. And I'm just going to go through the list. Offensive line, backup quarterback, wide receiver, play calling, DK, time of possession, penalties, overall sloppy play, unprepared, kicking game, pass rush. What did I miss of the negatives last night? What did I miss? Did I miss anything in
there? I feel like you covered most of it. You said DK. I guess DK kind of covers all of the DK thing.
Well, one target through three quarters. I don't know if – I mean, that's a Cosell question on Friday, and I'll touch base with Greg before then.
Yeah.
To have him look at that closely. Let's go through what we're dealing with here with this football team. They lose yesterday again, and overall this year, it's just been an odd year. First of all, three straight primetime games and four of their last six primetime games. So maybe we can just kind of forget about this primetime magic, because not all of those have been with Geno Smith, okay?
It's funny because you know there's actually a sign outside the broadcast booth of the primetime magic. I think those might be the three words that they use.
Primetime magic?
And it's like a sign, you know, they put up signs like with stats.
Yeah, well, like, they are no longer as primetime. Does it mean anything at all to this football team? More importantly, what does it mean anything to this team anymore? And this is not an indictment. I think people took this as an indictment last night when people had mentioned this. It's not an indictment on the 12s. It's not an indictment on the fan base, okay? I can speak on a lot of things with an opinion. I can speak on this with a pretty good, solid base of knowledge because I'm lucky enough to have been to almost every NFL stadium.
Yep.
It's different here. It's louder here. The fans are great here. And even... you know, my buddy Ryland Spencer and others are saying it's not what it was a few years ago. I get that. I'm still telling you that the bar was set so high, it's still better than most places, if not all places. It just is. It is a very, very good atmosphere. And from a standpoint of noise and crowd support or et cetera, this place, as far as NFL stadiums is concerned, is really, frankly, on a different level than most. And if it's not equal to, it tops almost every place in the league. So the fans are doing their job. But what the reality is this, it just doesn't matter. They've lost three in a row at home this year. They've lost their last five in a row at home with fans in the stands, dating back to the 2019 season. Let me emphasize that again. They have lost five straight games with fans in the stands at Lumen Field. Five in a row. They're 4-7 in their last 11 home games at home with fans. The home field advantage here no longer exists. Why is that? Because the team isn't very good. Not because the fans aren't good, not because there's a few people not showing up and all that. No, it's because the team isn't very good. But they're certainly not taking advantage of it. They're not taking advantage of a crowd. To the contrary, on one of the bigger plays of the game, it was a Seattle defender that jumped offside on a field goal that resulted in losing about a minute and 12 seconds off the clock at the end of the game.
Devastating call.
Yes, you held him out of the end zone. And yes, Carlos Dunlap, dance around because you got your first damn sack of the year on that ensuing, you know, series of downs after that jumping offside by Woods. It meant nothing because you needed clock. You needed clock, and you didn't have it because you jumped offside on a field goal attempt in which the Saints said after the game they didn't even try to draw them offside. It is ridiculous that an interior lineman did that. The same interior lineman that ran on the field late into an offside position on a tackle for loss earlier in the football game and actually was late coming off the field as well, which resulted in another issue for that team and a wasted timeout. Two other wasted timeouts in the third quarter. That goes back to what I said about sloppy play and being unprepared. This is on everybody, Kevin.
And these timeouts have been an issue for years and years.
But take the timeouts aside because the timeouts are part of the bigger picture. That is an unprepared, ill-prepared football team right now, and they were on display last night. How many times did you see late substitutions by that defense? Not just yesterday, but throughout the year. I know people want to say, well, it's not Ken Norton, it's Pete Carroll's defense. Absolutely. But the play calling on every single play, down to down, okay? That is on the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator and their subordinates who are with them, whether it's Clint Hurt as a defensive line coach who's doing his rotation with the defensive coordinator, etc. It is all supposed to work in unison, and it frankly is not. So if you want to tell me Ken Norton needs to go because the Seahawks defense isn't very good, I might say, well, it's also Pete. If you want to tell me Ken Norton has to go because they're sloppy as hell, I'm with you there. I'll 100% I'll back you up on that. Because you can't have that. You can't have wasted, sloppy situations. And Al Woods was part of three of them last night. Unacceptable. And I know one was on special teams. The offensive line to me is arguably the worst one we've seen since I think it was the Mora year. Maybe it was the Holmgren last year in which they went through six offensive left tackles at one point. Mm. Kyle Fuller has to be the worst center in the league if he's not damn close. Gabe Jackson has done nothing for them, and Brandon Schell feels like he's regressed a little bit at right tackle. I know he might be a little bit banged up, so I'll try to give him a break. He actually did come out of the game at one point, and I think he is a little bit banged up. The other part of that equation would be your left guard. Jamarco Jones was in last night, but Damian Lewis has been awful this year. And we've talked about that with both PFF Steve and with Cosell. So it's not just Ian saying this. It's guys that are studying the film and doing that. They will tell us that the center position is among the worst in the league. The left guard position is taking a step back. The right tackle's position is taking a step back. Gabe Jackson hasn't done anything to help. And frankly, I think it's hurting the play of left tackle, who has not looked very good at all this year. I will give Dwayne Brown the benefit of the doubt. Why? Because his name is Dwayne frickin' Brown. His resume tells me he should be a better player than he's showing right now. But how much of that is because of miscommunication, because the rest of the offensive line is so damn god-awful? You were behind that bench last night. What did it sound like?
Yeah, a couple things. One, I'm reminded.
Tell people why.
So I was doing sideline reporting, not on the air, but I was with Westwood One, mm-hmm. Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner calling the game on the national level.
Right.
So I was down there kind of providing injury updates, weather updates, frankly, was a lot last night.
Right.
And moving around. So, you know, spent a lot of time watching Pete in the blue tent.
Right.
That was exciting.
Yeah.
And then he went in for one play and came back out the next play with a different injury, which was crazy. But I also spent a lot of time behind the Seahawks bench. And I will say that the amount of yelling and head shaking coming from number 76 on the Seahawks was overwhelming.
Dwayne Brown losing his mind.
As soon as they get, because it's funny, you know, they go and sit down, the five starters sit down on the bench in order, and Dwayne Brown is talking to anyone who will listen, Ethan Posick, anyone who will listen, just, I can't hear exactly the words that they're saying, but it was a lot of words, animated, and a lot of head shaking.
Well, there's no doubt Dwayne Brown's sideways. I think it was the Pittsburgh game. In fact, I'm sure it was. I tweeted something out there watching from afar after a series in which they go. And yeah, so to explain what Kevin said, offensive line at the end of a series, they come, they all sit on the bench, they sit in order. Left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, mm-hmm. right tackle. They sit there, they go through everything with their offensive line coach and or coordinator, and they go through stuff and they talk. And then after, that's usually, and you see this, if you watch college football game, they do the exact same thing in college football. Mm-hmm. Exact same thing. So last week in Pittsburgh, they went over at one point, and I could tell there were some issues going on. I mean, yeah, T.J. Watt's good. We get that. We understand that. I guess if you know, but he's good. But at one point, they went over, and they sat down. Dwayne Brown sat down for maybe a millisecond, stood right back up, was basically looking like he was lecturing his offensive line. Then he walked over, and he got into it with Geno Smith and Russell and the quarterbacks, and I think Austin Davis is down there as well. So Dwayne Brown, a veteran with a proven track record of being a very good football player, is losing his blank right now, and it's not just what you saw last night. We saw it from afar in Pittsburgh as well, and I've seen it in other games too. He's losing it right now because this team, not only are they not very talented in some positions, they're just doesn't look like they are prepared, and that is massively disturbing. The bigger picture, Puckett brought up the lack of draft picks playing, you know, throughout the show. That bigger picture, absolutely, that's understood. So then what have you done? You've tried to go out there and piecemeal it together with trades for Carlos Dunlap. Hasn't worked out. Go out and sign Jamal Adams. Has been a colossal disaster, and we'll get to that in the 2 o'clock hour, how it has set them back years as an organization.
And frankly, yesterday's the first time he had a few effects of positive effects in a game.
And if we're celebrating him with a pass defense at the line of scrimmage and a quarterback hurry, that's the low bar that has been now set for Jamal Adams at that. If he would have had that game last year on the way to his record-setting sack year, we go,
boy,
God,
he didn't do anything.
Yeah, he got knocked down a pass line of scrimmage, big deal. I just start with the offensive line because I know they want to run the football. Alex Collins turned more 3- and 4-yard losses into 2- and 3-yard gains than I've ever seen in my life.
The times that I wasn't able to be back behind them the whole time.
Right.
That was when he was most frustrated, when they had like the eight or how many straight runs? 8, 9?
They started
whatever
eight
it was.
To start the game, yeah.
When he came out after one of those three run, and that was when he was maybe as frustrated as he's been, in my opinion, from what
and
I saw.
And usually, offensive linemen like to run the football, but
they like to move. They like to move the ball. That's what they like to do.
So the offensive line just is abysmal right now, and they've been dominated in pretty much every game. You know, I know we want to beat up on Geno, and rightfully so. And there's a lot of things to beat up Geno for. If you watch the game closely, think back. How many times did he did he drop back or take even a three-step drop out of a shotgun and have the ability to plant his right foot in the ground, set up and throw? Or was it more like this? Every time he dropped back, he was backpedaling and throwing off his back foot because there was pressure coming. Now, I think some of that, and I'm sure Steve will tell us this tomorrow and probably Cosell on Friday, some of that is Geno's pocket awareness isn't very good. That's something I don't get. I don't play the position. I don't know, but that's what you hear. So we'll get that from the experts later this week. So I'm sure that some of it's there. But you know why it's probably not very good? Because he doesn't feel comfortable back there because those guys are just getting, you know, they're just basically human pylons every damn down. Alex Collins saved their ass. I mean, how many times did he spin, juke, move, twirl, spin away from again, a negative loss and turn it into a positive gain? He's remarkable in that regard. You know, I know it would be fun to beat up on Rashad Penny. Did you see anything for Rashad Penny to go? Did you see any places for him to run?
No.
I mean, you're down low angle. You could probably look up and see. You can see if there's a gap.
You know who I saw the gaps?
Who?
Alvin Kamara.
A lot of those. We'll get to him in a second. I don't know in any way, shape, or form how you can go three quarters and have DK Metcalf targeted one time. Again, who's that on? I don't know. Geno? Maybe.
Walter.
Play calling? Perhaps. Combination thereof is probably the easier answer. Because there's no, it's football, man. It's the ultimate team game. It's the ultimate, everything fits together like a puzzle, right? That's how football works. But man, your most important and best and skillful player, your biggest physical mismatch, and one of the biggest physical mismatches in the NFL, he's targeted one time through the first three quarters. And that one time, he took it 84 yards. Lattimore's losing his mind. Now, maybe part of it was DK was losing his mind as well, and wasn't running the routes effectively or was getting off whatever the case is. I really don't care. There were a number of times where it's like, okay, what did Cosell talk about yesterday? They play man-to-man defense. Now, the safeties do come over to help. You got to trust 14 to make a play. You have to. He does that. That's why you have to trust him to make a play. Otherwise, why is he on your roster? If you don't trust that guy, that physical freak to go out there and make a play, if you don't trust him to, and you don't get him involved early, then that's just a criminal offense by a coaching staff, a play caller, and a quarterback. Number two, I don't know where the hell Tyler Lockett's been lately. I don't know what's going on with him. He came off the field last night, end of the game, a good 2 or 3 minutes after everyone else was already in the locker room. So I don't know where he's at or where his head's at. There's something not right there, and I hope he's okay. But, man, he's not involved in the offense at all. He is a dynamic playmaker. Dynamic playmaker. And Tyler Lockett's not involved. Freddie Swain is more involved in the offense than Tyler Lockett. That can't happen.
That was another one that I noticed a few times yesterday when and I don't know what his normal countenance is when he comes off the field, but it was kind of a slumping off of just like when you get home from
maybe
a hard
Kevin,
day of work and you kind of go
right.
Kind of fall into your chair. He did not have any juice. I'll put it like that. I didn't notice any juice from Tyler Lockett yesterday.
How about why? What maybe it's because he's so damn frustrated because he's not involved. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's on him.
How many targets did he have?
I was giving you another number here.
Sorry, I thought you had it open to that.
No. He had Tyler Lockett had 3 targets, and I think in the first half Tyler Lockett had. So he had 1 target in the second half. Tyler Lockett in a 1-score game had 1 target in the second half. Let me emphasize that again. Tyler Lockett, 1 target in the second half. We're running out of time this segment. Penalties. Do you want penalties? Should we go down that road for a second? How about
sure.
This? How about the penalty of the game, which was a bad call? I'll be honest with you. I think it was a bad call. The DJ Reed defensive pass interference was a bad call. Like, watch it over and over again. Player catches the ball. Reed's there. It's a bang-bang play. Flag comes not from the nearest official, from official a good 25 yards away, throws a flag, and it was short of the first down, short of the yard. It ended up 14 plays later. 14 plays later, the Saints score their first touchdown. Now, the Blair, and man, awful for him, awful news again for Blair. But this is a guy that did it in college, did it again yesterday. Crown of the helmet, face of Jameis Winston. Easy call, no-brainer, extends a scoring drive as well. You cannot do that. Cannot do that. Wagner had him wrapped up. Be done with it. What are you trying to prove? I know it's bang-bang play, but it cost them. It's a critical play. So many things wrong right now. So many things wrong. The worst thing about all of this is there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's none.
But Ian, when Russ is back, everything's fine.
Listen, I'm so torn right now, and we'll talk about that at 2 o'clock. I'm going to take a deep breath, talk a little college football with our Cougs, with Brink, and not like we don't have our issues over there. Rollo, thanks for coming.
Hey, you covered.
We covered. But we'll take a deep breath because at the top of the 2 o'clock hour, I am really torn. I'm just really torn because, yeah, Russ is going to come back, which is awesome. Can't wait. And I think what has been proven more and more by every week that goes by in the National Football League, if good quarterback play carries a football team, they have a great quarterback in Russell Wilson. The question is, does it make sense to keep moving forward with Russell Wilson?
Is that enough?
Right now, he doesn't have enough around him. Him and Dwayne Brown don't have enough around him. And that's what's terrifying if you're a Seahawks fan. That's what's absolutely terrifying if you're a Seahawks fan. We'll come back. We'll talk more about that at 2 o'clock. We've got some college football next. 49451 is a Coors Light text line. Feel free to chime in.
They're keeping Seattle chill.
Next, talking the Cougs.
It's time to talk Cougar football with former Wazoo stars Alex Brink and McChristo Bruce. Cougar football talk is brought to you by No Lie Brewhouse, 100% family-owned and independent brewery. Born and raised in Washington, USA, featuring 100% local ingredients and people committed to the craft. And by The Buffalo Gym, Maple Valley and King County's premier workout facility, thebuffalogym.com. And by Team Bruce Mortgage, making sure people get in the home of their dreams. Team Bruce Mortgage. Now with Cougar legends Alex and MK, here's a legend at the Coug, Ian Furness.
All right, with that, here we go on a Tuesday edition of the program. I missed you guys last week, Alex Brink and McChristo Bruce. I was planes, trains, and automobiles across the country, but it's good to be back with you guys. And, man, do we have a lot to talk about. Alex, first of all, tell us about American Football Brand, man. It's the holiday season's coming upon us.
Yeah, holiday season's coming up. Check out AmericanFootballBrand.com. Fun little venture that I started with some other former football players. Apparel brand that's celebrating everything we love about football, the history, the pageantry, you know, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Sunday mornings, all the things we like. So
I love it.
Check it out. Hats and hoodies. MK's got his all dialed in. So AmericanFootballBrand.com.
It makes the guns look great. Let me tell you.
He's going to be a model for you for that company is what he's going to be. This guy's your model, man. You got him right there for you. You can't look any better than this dude.
Hey, anytime you make those biceps look good, I want that shirt.
Yes, you do. He's sitting in the office, the Maple Valley office of Team Bruce Guild Mortgage, man. What's going on there?
Man, just so many good things. You know, we're building out this office right now. We want to be, you know, the lending team when you think about mortgages. We want to think anytime you're thinking of buying a home or refinancing, think of Team Bruce. So we're excited. We're out here looking forward to helping you guys out.
Beautiful. All right. And big thanks to No Lie Brewing out there in Spokane, Washington. No Lie Brewing on the river up there in the shadow of the UW. Boy, that's a flub. Although they're trying to build one too. Wazoo Medical Center there. So, of course, they are always following us. Okay. Let's. We got a lot of bigger picture things to talk about in our two segments today. But, Alex, we'll just get you. You're there. You're watching it. You're up close with it. Just a quick recap. I mean, the BYU game, they're a flub snap extra point away from at least in a tie late in the game and maybe even beating BYU. That's a nice showing against a good football team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really evenly matched game, in all honesty. BYU is a solid team. By no way was Washington State going to be able to walk in there and make mistakes and win that football game. So I think, the extra point that you drop turns into a huge play. There was a couple other plays along the way offensively. You had a couple shots you probably could have hit. I know Jake Dickert said specifically on defense, you know, he felt like if they could have held up a little bit better against the run, then they would have put the offense in a better position. In the end, like BYU kind of bullied Washington State up front, particularly on their offense, on the Washington State defense. And, you know, that was really the difference to me in the game. And so, again, I think it's a missed opportunity because Washington State, especially looking at the next, you know, stretch of games, probably needed that one when you start talking about bowl eligibility. But for everything going on at like a very broad stroke, I thought it was an impressive performance to come out and, you know, play the way they did. But I know it stings that they didn't get the win.
MK, when Alex mentions getting bullied up front, I go back and we'll get into the future coach and what's going on down the road in a minute. But man, it is frustrating to me at this point in the program with the consistency that they had with Leach all those years. And you know, I mean, the Dickert and you know, and obviously Rollo beforehand had been there for a couple of years. Why is it so hard? And you're around youth football right now. You're around your guys at Liberty, your young guy and all this stuff. Why is it so hard? What do they need to do to get back to get some dudes up front? And maybe it's not always big guys. I mean, I think back to you. You weren't the biggest guy. You know, Didi and Isaac Brown, those guys. I mean, those great. You don't always have to have 300-pounders. It'd be nice to have a guy in the middle like that. But what do they need to do to get back to those guys?
I just kind of think, like, as far as the recruiting goes, we've historically gone after those skill players and not necessarily those big linemen. And I think as we start shifting that a little bit to getting some big beasts and dogs up front, I think that's going to change. But at the end of the day, I mean, Alex will tell you too, when I'm looking at this, I don't think that's a bad idea. Holding a BYU to 21 points,
yep.
I'm not discouraged about that at all. I just noticed that this year we've struggled trying to put points on the board, right? Historically, we've put a lot more points than 19 points on the board.
Yeah, and I guess, Alex, if nothing else, I'm not sure how you have a game in which what do they have, one assistant coach left, one full-time assistant left before that game, after everything, all the dust had settled. I guess, in a sense, the fact that they scored what they did is almost a minor miracle, and they put up numbers. I mean, Jaden had some numbers. I know he missed some throws. Max Borgie, I'd like to see him get over 100 if he has a career high in terms of carries, so maybe that was also a little bit of an issue. But, I mean, they're getting there, but it's too late, getting to be too late in the season to just be getting there.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think MK hit the nail on the head. I mean, if you hold a good BYU team to 21 points, you should probably beat them, you know, if your offense is supposed to be a little more high-powered. And I thought what BYU did, frankly, structurally on defense was they kind of said, hey, you know, we're gonna leave light boxes. We're going to kind of play everything outside in and, you know, make you really grind it out, which is why Max had, you know, 20-some-odd carries but only 90 yards or something like that, whatever it was, right? Because they just weren't going to let you get the big hitters, both throwing the ball and running the football. And so when you had those opportunities, particularly throwing, there's probably two or three opportunities Jaden had to hit shots downfield and he missed them, and you just didn't have the explosive play. That's really the difference the last 3 weeks was you had explosive plays right on offense. I don't even think you had one explosive. You know, you had a couple of 20 plus yard catches, but they were catch and runs. They weren't really like the big throws you needed.
They need Macintosh too, I think. But yes,
one question I would say too is, Alex, don't you think that Borgie needs to get the ball in the backfield more as far as passes goes? I think he had, what, he had four receptions or something like that. But I think for us to be successful, he needs to touch that ball close to 8 to 10 times, swing passes, screen passes, just getting the ball in his hands. I think that's where we're really successful.
Yeah, and I think the best version of that and the best version of Max Borgie doing that, particularly when you think about the air raid, was less of the design plays and more of kind of the check down plays, which is when you have veteran quarterbacks like Anthony Gordon, Gardner Minshew, Luke Falk, whoever, they're able to, like, they process it like that. With a young quarterback like Jane DeLora, he's not thinking check down as much, and so you don't get kind of Max Borgie all by himself one-on-one, right? Because it's one thing to throw a screen to him, and then you got a bunch of bodies around him, and you got to hope you pop one. It's different when it's a check down, and it's just, as a young quarterback, that's just not always the focus.
And that's what he's going to do, is he's going to start running, right? And a veteran quarterback's going to go all the way down through that progression, which allows the spacing, right? Ian, the spacing, everybody's backing up the whole time, and it gives them more development.
Well, and just a real quick thought on Arizona State before we move on to the next segment and talk about the bigger picture and the coaching situation and who's next and all that. You know, Arizona State's a big favorite in this game. I think what you're talking about right there is, I think they can hang with Arizona State. That's that team they just played, albeit, you know, they beat Arizona State, right? I mean, they beat Arizona State, and Wazoo was right with them all the way till the bitter end. MK, I think this is a game, I don't want to say you have to have, but you need to go out there and
you do.
And I think, in a sense, if Jaden, beautiful weather, no excuses, you're playing in the desert, man, go out and get this thing.
Yeah, and here's the thing is we've been taking the ball away all year, and that's what it's going to come down to. We got to get takeaways one, and then we got to score points. I think it's really just the name of the game. But if we can just hold up, keeping any of these teams in the Pac-12 at 21 points or under, I think offensively we just got to come through and put points on the board, and that's what we struggle with all year.
A couple teams in Tucson barely scored 21 combined the other night, by the way, in one of the worst games in the history of football. Alex, I'd like to see if I think McIntosh is back this week. I think that helps a little bit too.
It does.
I mean, you know, I think he's definitely a more of a north-south runner that creates a different element to things. Takes a little pressure off Max having to, you know, get every carry, because I do think he gets, you know, he can get worn down like any back. So, I mean, having McIntosh backs is definitely a plus.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Bigger picture. I talking to Jack Thompson yesterday, the throwing Samoan, the godfather of all things Wazoo football. And
Uncle Jack,
who was a Rolovich supporter and fan, and he said, you know what, it was time to move on. And he always used the same term. He says, as Cougar fans, as Cougs, time to close ranks, move ahead. Let's see what's next. So let's talk about what's next. I want to get Alex's thoughts on. He's been around Jason Dicker quite a bit. Get his thoughts on that, and then also look ahead as well. Time to move forward, boys. Time to move forward. We'll talk more Cougar football next. Alex Brink, I'm Christo Bruce on 950 KJR.
Now back to Ian Furness on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's Sports Radio 950, KJR, and free on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, welcome back in. Jake Dickert, Alex, you've been around him. Quick thoughts on him.
I've been blown away, in all honesty. I mean, this situation is, I can't fathom what he is going through in this moment. I got to meet Coach Dickert. You know, when he first got hired, kind of around signing day, I really liked his energy and what he was all about. I've really liked what he's done on the defensive side of the football. It feels like those defensive players really play for him and are bought in. So when the transition happened, I kind of assumed that energy would carry over, and it sure has. But talking to him after the game, you know, I said something to him off air to the effect of, hey, this is a tough week. You know, great job, you know, kind of getting this thing going and putting up a good fight. And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, I appreciate that, but if we allow that type of thinking to enter into our minds, then it weakens our resolve and what we're trying to do here. And I thought that was an incredible thing. I wish I'd asked him on air, because it was a really really impressive statement. I think he just firmly believes that this team can be great. This team can be great. He can be great. He can be great in this role and help bring everybody along with, along with him. So I've been very impressed so far.
There's going to be a lot of names, MK, that are mentioned out there. Let's start though. I mean, last time they elevated a defensive coordinator was a guy by the name of Doba, and ended up being the Pac-10 Coach of the Year. And yeah. I think people always look at the Doba years and they maybe think, well, what happened towards the end? I mean, he still left with a decent record at the end, and people forget. Tragic. I mean, his wife Judy passed away. When that happened, it was just devastating to the whole staff. A lot of things kind of fell through the cracks. Dobes was phenomenal. I know you wouldn't mind seeing a defensive guy in that position, huh?
For real. And honestly, the only thing I can really equate this to is that transition from Mike Price over to Doba, right? What's going on right now. But at the same time, it's like the guys are just going to rally around it because, yeah, you're fighting for your coach, but at the same time, you're fighting for your brothers on the field, right? And I think that's what everybody was saying. And Alex, what you just said about Coach, that actually gave me goosebumps, because thinking about it, like, if you allow that, like, that participation trophy mindset to come in, I mean, it'll just seep through the whole team. So I'm so glad that you shared that story, and I hope everybody in the Cougar Nation can take that and say, okay, I can get behind that and rally.
Well, there's Jake Dickert or whoever else. Let's talk what they need in Pullman, what they need as a head coach, and what these kids need as well. They need stability. I think we'd all agree upon that. Listen, the pandemic has changed everyone in so many different ways. It's caused so many issues that, you know, ripple effects we never thought we'd see. But as we move ahead, Graham Harrell's a name that's going to be out there. And in fact, I know it's a name that's out there. I know there's already been conversations with Graham Harrell and the school. He was a Leach guy. I think it's a little bit more of an evolved or air raid, Alex, than maybe Leach had. Graham's a younger coach. He's got some guys already in place, I know, that would come with him. Maybe a Clay McGuire comes back, guys like that. Let me just start with that name. If I throw out Graham Harrell, Alex, your thoughts?
Well, I love the idea of, you know, kind of re-racking the air raid and to some degree some of the Leach, you know, the Leach lineage. I think that's great. I think one of my you know, one of my big pieces of puzzle here that I've realized about Washington State is, particularly offensively, you can't just have somebody that does what everybody else does. There has to be a system that's very clear and very unique, and you can recruit to that and find, and you have a very clear blueprint of the athletes that you want. And I think that's what Mike Leach showed, is that, you know, he was very obviously consistent in his system, and he knew exactly what he wanted, and he knew he could recruit that athlete. So you get that. You get that, I think, when you bring Graham Harrell in offensively, or somebody of that, of the liking. The other side of it offensively that I think would be really important as the game is evolving, I think whoever in the offense, and Graham can do this, I think in his version of the air raid, the quarterback run of the football has to be a part of what we do at Washington State, because we're not consistently going to get passers and athletes that we need to compete at a high level without adding the quarterback as an athlete. As the game is evolving, and those, you look at the high school level, that's where the quarterbacks are at. They're playmakers, and they're the best athletes on the field. That has to be utilized at Washington State, and it's currently not.
MK, before you jump in, let me go to that just for a second. So when you're watching and you're involved heavily in the high school game and high school quarterbacks, you're not seeing the Drew Bledsoes. You're not seeing that, Gordon was kind of that way, I guess, to a sense as well. Anthony was, you know, Jacob Eason at Washington. You're not seeing the 6'4", 230-pound drop back, put your foot in the ground, not real mobile guy. That quarterback isn't as much as part of the high school game as he used to be.
It exists, but it's not the same. And lots of times those 6'4", 220-pound guys are great athletes. They're Trevor Lawrences, and they're guys that can run and move. And, you know, you kind of pigeonhole yourself if that's not a part of your game. Right. If that's not a part of your scheme, you pigeonhole yourself and you rely on all the athletes around you. And Washington State is not historically going to be able to recruit the best athletes on the field. So you have to, if the quarterbacks are now going to be more developed in that sense, then we got to be able to utilize them. That's my big take offensively.
Okay.
And, you know, you can do that with Graham. But in general, I love the idea of some of those guys coming back. My concern is Graham Harrell's never been a head coach. And at the Pac-12 level, that's a big piece of the puzzle. And so that would be the question mark you're going to run into.
And MK, I think about that too. I mean, it's like, okay, you could have a guy, you know, first of all, we've seen guys that have been a head coach. I mean, I look at what's going on now in Colorado, Carl Durrell, kind of a guy that's been there, done that, coming back. Who knows? Early on, we'll see what happens down the road. What do you want to see? What does M. Christo Bruce, a former player and alum, what do you want to see in terms of not even so much a name, if you have a name, throw it out there, but if just the type of guy you want to see.
Yeah. And here's the thing though. I think as we're recruiting head coaches, we always have someone with a story, right? So when Mike Leach came in, it was really cool. Like, he was the pirate guy that came in. He had all this big hype around him. There's a story. You know, you think about Rolo when he came in, you know, he's from Hawaii. He's got his story that comes in. It's like, who's the guy that's going to come in like a Minshew and have that story around him that's going to kind of build a buzz around Pullman? So that's the first thing that I think about. Do we need somebody that has this, like, you know, tailored story behind
it? And want a personality. Personality as well. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So that's one thing that everybody can rally behind. And then the other thing too is like recruiting. Historically, we've recruited a lot of skilled players, right? We're going to score one more point than you, right? Whatever happens on defense happens. So I'd like to figure out, okay, do we have a balance where we think, okay, defense wins championships? Are we going to beef up the defensive line? Are we going to get after some dogs to where we're holding people to, you know, 14 points or below, right? And then building around that. So that's another thing. And what Alex said about, you know, that air raid, really like recruiting to that air raid, I think it was really specific. We were going to throw the ball 50 times plus a game. So receivers knew they wanted to come to Washington State, right? Specific things like that. So as long as there's a clear path, I mean, that's really what we're looking for.
Yeah, I think the recruiting part of it's huge. You know, I think you guys both touched in on that, whether it's whatever the system is offensively that you can get guys in. You know, I mean, I know there's some receivers in the state that would probably come here if it was still the air raid. On the other side of the football, I don't know what that is, but maybe finding a guy, you know, an aggressive coach. And, you know, Doba and Chris Ball and those guys, man, they recruited defensive players back in the day, man. Those dudes came to Pullman. I mean, before Jimmy Pond or Jimmy Lake, whatever, before he had his stuff going on, I mean, DBU was Wazoo. I mean, it was Wazoo. I mean,
yeah, blue collar guys too. Like they went, they didn't go find your, you know, your chipper guys or your five star guys. They were find people that pulled up their bootstraps and played football.
No, that's the Abdullah brothers and Trufant and Carl Pema and Jason David. Those are all NFL guys. You know, those are all NFL guys. So, all right, listen, great stuff, fellas. Alex, tough duty going down to the desert this week. You'd be okay with that? I mean, it's boy, the Northwest.
I wish I could bring my golf clubs, you know, but can't make that happen. The only problem is and MK can attest to this, we never play well in Tempe, and I have zero idea why, because the weather's always great and it's always, you know what I mean, but I've always felt that way.
Yeah, well, let's change that. I know they won it out a few years ago. I was down there for that game covering the Seahawks, and they won that, although they were up early big and then they almost blew it. So hopefully you go down there. I've the way the Pac-12 is this year, go down there, knock them off, have some fun, enjoy the weather. Fellas, we'll talk to you next week. Alex Brink and Crystal Bruce, big thanks to No Lie Brewing as well, American Football Brand, Team Guild Mortgage, Team Bruce Guild Mortgage, all that. We'll talk to you guys next week. Alex, MK, go Cougs.
Go Cougs, baby.
Go Cougs.
Back with more on 950 KJR.